Now, before we get to NAFTA again, I'm going to ask a little bit more about this time period. In terms of the effects on the scientific and technical information community, again, this is why you're still at AEC. I know about the Bush report, the Steelman report, various presidential orders. How did all of those kinds of things affect you and what you were doing at the AEC, and particularly after you became the director of AEC Technical Information in Washington?
I was really not impacted too much until I went to NASA.
Really? Because AEC was treated differently, or what?
No. It's just that the AEC information program, in its way, was a very successful program at that particular point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I claim any credit for it, but an awful lot of people that made that thing work.
The AEC seems to me to be the beginning point. You all had the most reports, the most technical information, the really beginning of handling scientific and technical information in the federal government most systematically and effectively.
There's no question about that. You're absolutely right. The NASA program was built on the AEC model.
Okay. Let's talk about that transition then. How did...
The problem that I had, the reason people say, why did you leave the Atomic Energy Commission?
I have that question also.
Okay, well, do you want me to talk about it now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I left the Atomic Energy Commission for two reasons. One, I liked developing things. The problem I had at the Atomic Energy Commission, when I left in 1960, that program had been operational for 14 years.
Essentially since 46, yeah, 47.
It was a pace setter. A lot of the people who developed the program, working types, had been there since the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Mostly scientific types. Except for Bernie Fry and a few other folks that you mentioned.
Mostly scientific types. The Atomic Energy Commission was not the the real exciting program that it was in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, the real exciting program was the space program.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
But now let's talk about the, because I don't have a good feel yet for who did this development work. I mean, you were in charge of these various units.
Right.
Were there other folks involved in this? Who were the other folks involved in the development of the AEC technical documentation program?
Well, remember now, a lot of this was developed by the AEC team.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you have to also understand that Alberto Thompson was bright enough in recognizing that the system that we built, because he told me this, the system we built is for chemists. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
He was user-oriented. The first thing he did was to set up a technical information panel. The technical information panel had as its members a senior, usually scientific type from each of the major labs. He was bright enough to do
mm-hmm.
this, okay? Because
mm-hmm.
he said, whatever we develop should be developed in accordance with what they say they need. Now each of them set up an information program, to use the products and services that we provided.
Mm-hmm.
But they also had a capability, because they were primarily R&D operations.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought R&D type.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some very capable people. At the University of California Radiation Lab, there was a man by the name of Ray Wakerling. Now, he was a scientific type, but he was an information type. Okay? At the Argonne National Laboratory was Hoyland, H-O-Y-L-A-N-D-E, Young, woman. Okay? She was a scientific type, well-recognized, but she was an information type.
Mm-hmm. Now, who was making the decision to hire these folks?
I don't know. Well, they were hired initially as these people were all part of the programs, primarily as technical people.
Mm-hmm. And then got into what
got,
they did.
Got into the information type.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
As a user.
Mm-hmm.
As a user. They were both chemists.
Mm-hmm.
Chemists are users of information.
Yeah.
You find more of them than, if you know, people say, gee, I thought you started skin. Yeah, I wasn't a very good chemist.
Well, do you give Thompson the central credit for getting it set up and setting the, you say there's the technical information panel, what these folks met someplace?
I give Thompson the credit for organizing it and for putting together the team that initially developed into a program that I was in charge of.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I don't claim the credit for developing, because I didn't have enough background then. From NASA on, that's different. From 1960 mm-hmm. on, that's different.
Yeah,
I had something. Well, I was not only in charge, but I had something to draw on. I mean, and I had all the experience that was developed in the AEC program, the good and the bad. And the problem that we had, as I started to say, a problem that we actually had in the Atomic Energy Commission was that middle age was starting to set in. Okay? Remember, when I went to NASA, I did away with the microtide. I don't want any microcards.
Mm.
I want something that'll give me a reproducible mass. That's what I said I wanted. I'll tell you how I set up that particular program, okay?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
But the point I'm trying to say is, I try to do something at the Atomic Energy Commission. And people say, well, you know, we got all this stuff, what are we going to do? All the reasons why you didn't want to do anything. That's all I'm just saying is that the real developments in the energy program were developed primarily in by NASA and then given back to the Atomic Energy Commission.
Who made the decision to go with microcards?
Probably Thompson.
Mm-hmm. Now he's over at NSF by 53, 54, I think.
He died at NSF.
Yeah, right. And
Bert Atkinson took his job.
Right.
Bert's made a major contribution.
Mm-hmm. So he switched, left AEC, went to NSF, but probably these things had been set up, and then when you became director,
but remember, why does a man like Alberto Thompson leave the Atomic Energy Commission where he's developed all this stuff?
A new challenge.
One is a new challenge because he's that type who accepts the challenge, and two, he was getting more and more difficult to get things done in the Atomic Energy Commission. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, setting their ways.
It didn't start with me.
Yeah.
It's the same thing happened with NASA. I can show you exactly the same thing that happened with NASA. The NASA information program used to be the world leader. They were out in front on everything, okay? And today, you can hardly find them.
Interesting. All right, well, let's move to NASA. So we know now why you left the AEC. Now, this gets into my memories here, because I finished college in 1961. In 1960, when you started with NASA, everybody in the world wanted to work for NASA. And I assume this was part of your motivation for going
there. Well, part of it was that, and part of it was an opportunity to start from scratch, because NASA did not have. My budget the first year at NASA was $75,000. In 1960, and the agency was set up in 1958.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have much. The NASA information program, when I took over, was the old information program of the National Advisory Committee on Aeronautics, NACA.
Mm-hmm.
A very traditional program.
What was it like? I mean, what are we talking about in terms of any kind of automation? Were they using any kind of automated equipment at the time? They'd been putting out an index, as I recall.
They put out an index, but the number of items that they had in their index was relatively small.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a small database.
Right.
Very small database.
Mm-hmm.
They had a big publishing program. They would publish NACA technical memorandum, technical reports, technical translations. You know, we adopted mm-hmm. the same thing at mm-hmm. NASA. But but it was a very, very conservative, very, very conservative program. You know, I'll wait till I get to NASA.
No, that's all right. Now we're at NASA. Go ahead now. You came in as Deputy Director of Technical Information. Who was in charge?
No, I came as Deputy Director of the Office of OTIEP, Technical Information and Educational Programs.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it was much broader than information.
Yeah.
Because management was wise enough to recognize that education was very, very important. I mean, this was a whole new age. This was a space age.
Mm-hmm.
And they recognized not only the need to do something in the education area, but also the political advantages to
Right. Okay. Now, who was your boss then?
My boss was a man by the name of Shelby Thompson. Shelby Thompson. Remember, I came from the Atomic Energy Commission. I moved up to Washington. And I reported to Moore Salisbury. Moore Salisbury had two divisions reporting to him, a public information division and a technical information division. Okay? I headed the technical information division. Shelby Thompson was Moore Salisbury's deputy. So in a way, I worked for Shelby as well as for Morse. Shelby came over to the space program. And when he came over to space program, he wanted me to come over and join him.
Hmm.
That's how he came over.
Hmm.
And I came over because he offered me the opportunity to build a new program, to do things that I couldn't get done at Atomic Energy Commission.
Hmm.
He knew what the problem was in Atomic Education.
Yeah.
And they had much bigger problems than that. The big problems then was the radiation fallout of tests and all the political humbug, you know, all that furor.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you were director of the program by 61. How did this happen so quickly?
They split off the educational program. Two things got separated.
Uh-huh. Were you in favor of that switch?
Oh, yeah. I could then concentrate on one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was concentrating on two things. I remember when I first went, let me explain. When I first went to NASA, and they had this little rinky-dink program, which is way behind and everything. And have been doing things since they set up the NACA back in 1906, something, you know.
Yeah, right.
World War.
Now, we're talking about catalog cards again here, or have they gone?
Catalog cards. You know, Miller, Gene Miller,
mm-hmm.
Gene Miller who became the vice president under Mort Taub at Dark Inc.,
mm-hmm.
and who really ran day-to-day operations of Dark Inc., was a librarian at NACA before I went to NASA.
Uh-huh. Huh.
Before I went to NASA.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gene was a traditional type librarian. Mort made him much more bing, bing, bing. Mort was never satisfied with what was.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Mort. I mean, my biggest problem with Mort is that Mort, either run a production operation or you run a development operation. I said, your problem is that if I put you in charge of a production operation over here, you'll never get it into production because you always will find ways of making it better and improving it, and we never get into production, you know. It's always development.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
What? And that was a problem I had with Morton. He was the only argument I had. That's the reason that I did not go with him and developed our online system with Roger Summit.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's back up just a little bit before we get to that. You formed the Scientific and Technical Information Facilities Program.
Yeah, well, let me explain what happened. Okay, when I came to NASA, I had a selling job because NASA was trying to find its own identity. Let me explain. The biggest portion of NASA was NACA. Okay? Langley, Edwards Air Force Base out there, the thing out Ames, out in California, Cleveland, they have a big, does that still do?
Mm-hmm. The Wright Field.
Wright Field.
Uh-huh.
NASA was made by taking NACA a little bit from the Navy, not very much. A bigger piece, but not anywhere near the size of NACA, from the Army. And that was Werner von Braun and that group down in Huntsville. Okay? Well, you had on the outside the U.S. Air Force. The U.S. Air Force was fighting NASA for control of the space program. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And NASA was different than Atomic Energy Commission. In the Atomic Energy Commission, the weapons program was run by an Army general, but he reported to a civilian.
Right.
Okay? You see what I'm trying to say? There's a complete difference. In the space program and in the missile program, the Army had its own missile program. Air Force had its own intercontinental missile program. Two programs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you would use basically the same type of launch vehicles for a space program as you'd use in these two military programs. So there was a lot of this maneuvering back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look back at it now and, things just looked like it all fell into place. Well, they did, but let me tell you, it was interesting in the beginning. It was really interesting
yeah.
in the beginning.
And you had the job of setting up the technical information facilities in these places.
Well, let me explain. We were having failures. The early NASA shots were disasters.
Mm-hmm.
You can remember seeing a thing kind of go up maybe 2 feet and
yeah.
or go up and they had to explode the thing up because it was going off course or doing something. Right? Disaster. Absolute disaster. I remember one that blew up on a pad. And I went into the files and I found a report that showed I mean, I found a report that predicted some of these things that might happen. Okay? And, but that was an NACA report. Well, the military weren't going to use any old NACA report. I mean, that's just, you have to understand that, okay? I mean, government people don't work together because they love each other. And there's a lot of competition in between groups. You have to understand. You have to understand that. So I took that to my boss, who was Shelby Thompson, and we took it to the administrator. I said, look, there's stuff that have been developed. There's information that's developed that are in your holdings, in the holdings of the component that the military is given over to NASA. But we got to get this stuff organized, and we got to get it into the hands of the people who need it. Okay, it's just that simple. Okay, and he said, well, develop me a plan. I developed two plans. I sat down and designed the program all by myself. I'll claim credit for the NASA. I did it all myself. I set that whole program up. Based on what I learned at the atomic at AEC. Uh-huh. Okay, I mean, these things didn't come out of no place. I mean, I was conditioned a certain way, but I knew what its limitations were, as well as its strengths. I try to build on the strengths. And I try to do something about those limitations. Mm-hmm. Try to, and I designed the programs as a contractor operation and as a government operation. Now, in 1960, all information programs were government operated. Okay. I designed them in detail. I designed each product. I wrote out all the specs for the products, every product, all the specs for the products, and I costed them as a computer operation. I mean, as a government operation and as a contractor operation. I cost them in terms of dollars. I cost them in terms of calendar. Okay. I sold top management on buying the contractor operation. You say, well, what's the big deal? Let me tell you something. My colleagues among other government agencies were looking sideways at me because everything was operated in-house. The Army had its own. NLM had its own. Agriculture had its own. Interior had its own. Everybody had its own. Mm-hmm. Okay? Okay. The NACA types that were the majority, the biggest portion of NACA, had its own. It built its own wind tunnels. It operated its own wind tunnels. It did everything in-house. It had its own facilities. The R&D was not done by Boeing. It was not done by Lockheed. It was done by them, NACA. Mel Day comes along, okay, and he proposes this. Well, let me tell you, the administrator bought it. The deputy administrator was a man by the name of Hugh Dryden, Dr. Hugh Dryden, a great man. He was the former director of NACA. And he told me later that he was the guy that fought me. Now I'll come back to this. Okay? You see, remind me to tell you the Hugh Dryden story, because that was a big revelation to me. I didn't know a lot of the back and forth over here. Mm-hmm. I had an idea, but I didn't know a lot of the details.
Now the administrator at this time was Golden? Is that?
No. It was Jim Webb.
Oh, okay. So where did you get the idea to go with the contractor?
If I was going to run a thing, I ran government operations. If I was going to run a government operation, it would take me over a year to recruit people. Never mind do anything to recruit
because
people.
Because of the red tape.
Because of the red tape. And absolutely right.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And so I said, look, let's use the genius of the U.S. system over here. I mean, let's establish a partnership. Okay? And it was a unique partnership. Unique. Partnership between the government, private industrial sector, and a professional society. No, we haven't done that before. Okay? And I said, one, the old Institute of Aerospace Sciences, which became the American Rocket Society, which became AIAA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The old IAS was publishing journals, and they had a section that had abstracts. And the abstracts covered open literature. So I said in the beginning, it'll be a triumvirate. The government will provide the resources and the overall policy direction. And a government facility, our government facility, contractor operated, would be by a private information company, and they would handle the gray literature, the non-published literature. Okay? The professional society would handle the published literature. Now, why did I do that? Two, one, they were covering the published literature. Okay. Two, politically, it was to my advantage. Because a professional society could do things I couldn't do myself. They could do for me what I couldn't do. They could do for me what the for-profit here couldn't do.
Okay, now let's talk about the selling job for each one of those. Let's go back to the administrator story and the fight with the deputy administrator.
Well, I didn't have any fight with him, but I didn't know that he was fighting me.
Okay.
Until later on.
How long did it take to sell this within NASA?
It took me a year. A good part of a year.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say maybe 7 or 8 months.
Lots of memos, reports that you were writing.
Yeah. My job was to develop the plans,
mm-hmm.
which I detailed out. And I explained, I explained the political advantages of what we were doing here and why this would appeal to Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I learned fast in Washington. I was only in Washington 3 years, 2 years, and I learned fast. But I learned the political advantages of doing this and the advantage of essentially trying to put together a team which essentially had these three sectors involved.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
If I must say so for myself, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I went out for proposals. The best proposal I thought came from Doc Inc. Primarily because of Doc Inc. was Mortown. And Mortown was the AEC model, and this was based on the AEC model. I mean, they'd done it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He knew exactly what I was talking about. I mean, he knew the weak points and the strong points. There's just no question mm-hmm. about this.
Did Tom help you work up the plan, or you were doing it strictly based on your experience?
On my experience. It would have been wrong if he had helped me work up the plan. In fact, there was an appeal by an unsuccessful bidder. The reason he got this, to try to get a court injunction, because Tao and I had worked together. So, no, look, I've been around government long enough to know there are certain no-nos.
Yeah, yeah.
And I
who was the competition at the time? Or just can you talk about who the other bidders were?
Well, I can't remember most of them. There were some small information companies. Mm-hmm. There was also a storage and van company that submitted a proposal.
A storage and van company.
Well, so you're storing information. Storage.
Okay.
I'll never forget that storage. And that the proposal was something like 3 pages. Maybe he says, "Give it to us." He says, "We're storage experts. We can store anything."
Talk about the selling job then with AIA. Was that?
I dealt with Bob Dexter. Bob Dexter initially was leery about working with me. Only because he had developed this information program and developed a good library at IAS. And he was afraid, you know, what this juggernaut NASA might do to his program. The advantage of the IAS and the American Rocket Society, AIAA, is that the vice presidents of all of the major aerospace companies were all big muckety-mucks in those professional societies. That was a great political base.
Mm-hmm.
Not only would it help me on a hill, it helped me with the users. I mean, they would see that the stuff got used.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see, this made a big difference.
Yeah.